Remember back when you were a kid, locked in your room, singing along with the radio through your Mr. Microphone, with dreams of making it to Carnegie Hall? Well, for most of us, we just relive those experiences at karaoke nights or open mics. But for some, through the hard work of developing their talent and quite a lot of motivation, they make it to Carnegie Hall to showcase their talent for the rest of the world to see. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's news feature, we'll be sitting down with someone who's just recently made it back from the Big Apple and a performance at Carnegie Hall, St. Cloud State University Music Department Chair Terry Vermillion. Professor Vermillion is part of the musical group Trio Lorca that also includes Catherine Verilli and Melissa Krauss, and they were invited by audition to appear in concert as part of the 2011-2012 Distinguished Concerts Artist Series in New York. This series is reserved for refined professional musicians of the highest caliber and offers artists the opportunity to showcase their talents in a unique manner on one of the world's most renowned concert stages. Trio Lorca performed on Friday, March 16th, and as they returned to town just this week, Terry Vermillion visited KVSC Studios to talk about his experiences in New York, as well as why music is so important to society and the educational process. So Terry, I guess there's really only one way to start the interview. Dude, Carnegie Hall.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall? You Google app it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what was the process that led you to Carnegie Hall.
Catherine Verilli, our soprano on staff, kind of had discovered Distinguished Concerts in New York. And that's a company that they're basically booking agents. And they were accepting applications for their 2011-2012 Performing Arts Series. So they book performances in Carnegie Hall, and they require basically an audition for that. So we put together a CD of our stuff, sent some copies of our programs, sent our bios and things, and basically were then accepted into their Concert Arts Series.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was your impression of that? Had you ever been out there before for anything?
No. And you know, I mean, people will laugh, but I actually did have to Google Earth New York, Manhattan, and find out where Carnegie Hall was. I've never been to New York. I've been plenty of other places, but that's not one of the places I've had an opportunity to go. So no, I quite literally did have to find out where Carnegie Hall was. It's on 7th Avenue. It's, you know, just three blocks south of Central Park. And from that point forward, I just started getting really excited.
Nice, nice. What did you guys do there?
How did the trip go?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so we flew out on... I flew out with Dr. Krauss, Melissa Krauss, who's the flutist and composer, and we flew out together on Wednesday. We got situated in the hotel in the city and kind of got our bearings. And then Melissa and Catherine went to a designer in East Village who was designing the gown for Catherine and fitting Melissa and Anne Duhamel. Anne Duhamel played piano. She teaches in Morris, University of Minnesota Morris, and Anne performed on two of the pieces with us. So they all went to a fitting down in the East Village on Wednesday, and then we just rested up because traveling can make you pretty tired. And then Thursday, we had booked a room, basically a conference room in the hotel, Park Central Hotel, for our rehearsal. So we felt a need to do a dress rehearsal, and they delivered all of the percussion equipment to that space. And then we basically, I had to get used to all new percussion instruments because I wasn't going to take anything with me. And the concert required quite a bit of equipment from a marimba to a vibraphone to a pair of timpani and glockenspiel and drums and cymbals and, you know, quite a fortress of instruments. So I needed some time to get used to that equipment. And so Thursday we spent dress rehearsing. And then Friday was the performance on Friday the 16th. So the equipment was delivered to Carnegie at around 2 o'clock, and we had a dress rehearsal from 3 to 5, and then some time off for dinner, and then some more rehearsal up until concert time at 8 o'clock. Yeah, and then we had the concert. That was at 8 o'clock, and then Melissa and I came home on Saturday, and then some of the others stayed to experience St. Patrick's Day in downtown New York.
That works.
It works, yeah. Yeah, apparently it was quite a time.
Nice. So how well attended was the concert? It was just kind of...
Really well attended. We were really surprised. We had been getting some preliminary reports that they were at about 80% capacity in the hall. We performed in the Weill Hall. There's three locations inside the Carnegie Building. There's the very famous large stage, and then there's a medium-sized stage, and then there's the smaller one. Seats about 220 people, and we were at about 80% capacity, so I think we were somewhere between 160, 170 people there.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a nice, appreciative audience. I think they really appreciated the diversity of our program, and we had some really... I guess what people kind of call out there, modern, contemporary things, George Crumb and Lucas Foss. And then we had some traditional art songs, some Spanish art song that we had arranged for the group. And then some contemporary things, Rufus Wainwright being probably the most contemporary of the pieces we had.
Nice. Do you actually have like a CD of some of the music you guys performed?
Or? We do. You know, what we have is we have recordings from both our St. Cloud State performance and our performance out in Morris. We took the program out there kind of as a ramp up. But it would have been very expensive for us to record the actual performance. So we opted not to do that. We did have a photographer come out, and the university was gracious enough to pay for a professional photographer. So we will be getting back some photographs from the performance. So he was in the back of the hall during the performance. And then we took some stage shots afterwards. And the university will have an opportunity to use those photographs for their promotion materials, and as will we in the Department of Music. And so that's kind of how we documented the performance.
Yeah. Speaking about the Department of Music, have any others from St. Cloud State's Music Department made it out to Carnegie Hall yet? Or?
Well, you know, I don't know the detailed background. I do know that Carmen Wilhite, our piano professor, has performed at Carnegie. And I imagine that there's a number of others, especially throughout the history of St. Cloud Music Department. I don't know about those who are currently teaching right now that may have had an opportunity, but it is a destination for upcoming musicians. And through programs like Distinguished Concerts in New York, and their operations, an opportunity for people to premiere in New York, and we're just really, really happy that the university was able to support us, and we were able to take advantage of this opportunity to have our own New York premiere.
Yeah. It is. It really is one of those things where, the music department's kind of this, when we're looking at like budgets and all that.
Yep.
All that stuff. How do you determine if a department is being successful?
Right.
Or something like that? And
yep.
There you go.
Yeah. External validation, you know, is a term that floats around. And so, for us to audition for this art series and to be accepted into it, you know, I think is a validation of, I think, the level that the trio is performing at.
So what other things does the music department have going on here, towards the end of the semester?
As the semester's wrapping up. As a matter of fact, tonight, would be March 20th, Tuesday, March 20th, is a benefit concert that the Wind Ensemble is presenting for the victims of the Japanese tsunami. Richard Hansen, who is our professor in conducting, who also does the Wind Ensemble and some musicology as well, teaching music history, is a very well-respected conductor and has authored a very concise book on wind bands. He conducts frequently in Musashino Academy in Japan and will again go this April and early May to spend some time conducting the ensemble at Mushishino Academy. So his connections to Japan are strong, and I think that the tsunami, the tragedy, really impacted him and those he knows there. So they're performing a benefit concert tonight. And we just finished a really wonderful run of a musical, and The Drowsy Chaperone was one of the most attended musicals we've presented in some time. Our orchestra director, Daniel O'Brien, was conducting, and that collaboration with theater is the exact type of thing that is the future of our music department, and with the School of the Arts now part of our organizational structure within the College of Liberal Arts, there will be bigger and better collaborating across the different programs. And we hope to be able to do a musical every year. And so we're already starting to look for the next one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, musical. Yeah, I've heard about a little bit about that with, I know some of the theater kids, and, well, you know, Carol Cooley's down here as a DJ as well.
That's
so,
right. Oh, excellent. Yeah. So, she's in the costume office there.
Uh-huh. Yep. So you hear a little bit of the development of things. So
yeah, and
neat.
Film studies is doing really well. So our new media program in music is doing a lot of collaborating with film students, and so they're doing some musical creation in the computer for video and film scoring as well. There's a lot of collaboration that happens with the art department. And, of course, Dr. Scott Miller and Kristen Twombly, those two are heavily involved in a variety of digital mediums. Mm-hmm. And so that program's doing really well. So we're moving into that period of time in the department where we have a variety of ensembles performing, ramping up for the end of the semester performances, student recitals. Students, of course, have been busily preparing their recital material for junior and senior recitals. So we hit April, late March, early April, mid-April, and things get really, really busy for us.
Yeah. And most of these performances are going to be around, like, either Performing Arts Center, possibly.
Or Ritchie Auditorium, right. We do a lot of outreach into the community, you know, especially at places like St. Mary's Cathedral, Salem Church, the Newman Center, which is practically on campus. It's right here. We've done a lot of outreach, both fall and spring semesters, into the central Minnesota area. We do a lot of touring. And when we go out and tour, we'll not just perform, but we're doing some clinicking and coaching and teaching. And our focus is really on supporting our alumni that are out in the field. And part of the teacher preparation initiative is to provide some support to our graduates in their first 3 to 5 years out in the field. So we send our ensembles and our faculty to places like Rogers, Minnesota, where David Biegler is doing bands and Jackie Potvin is taking care of the choral area, and they're both our graduates. So that's a very strong part of our mission.
It's not over once they graduate.
Oh, by all means not. Yeah. You definitely cannot learn everything you need to know in a four-year program. And, of course, we all understand you learn so much more in those first 3 years, critical to the success of retaining a job, growing a job, coming into a program perhaps that's been cut, that's seen some reductions, and working very, very, very hard to try and grow that program back to a healthy state. And so we understand that we need to follow them into the field and try and provide that support.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC, and in today's news feature, I'm sitting down with St. Cloud State University Music Department Chair Terry Vermillion, and we've been discussing his recent performance at Carnegie Hall in New York City, as well as other things affecting the state of music education in Minnesota and around the country. So, Terry, how do you think school districts and music teachers are dealing with budget cuts and other perspectives that they might have to overcome so that they may do their jobs?
Yeah, boy. I think the one thing that has struck me is the negative perspective on the field of teaching. I got into the field of teaching because I had great teachers who positively affected the way I developed, from study skills to interpersonal communications to punctuality, reading and writing, research, obviously as a musician, practicing and preparing and critical examination. I mean, you could go on and on and on and on about all the amazingly fantastic things teachers do. Teachers in the arts, I think, have even a closer personal relationship with their students. Teachers of music and of art and the fine arts and even of literature, when you're critically examining a writing and having that kind of a discussion, it's a very close relationship. And so we need really great teachers to guide kids as they're coming up through our educational system. And for me, what has been frustrating in the past 10 to 12 years has been the focus on budgets and looking at education as a business. And I understand bottom line, and as department chair for music, I work with numbers all the time. I understand that systems need to be financially solvent. But when you try and apply and overlay a business model onto education, you run into some serious problems. And I don't know that we have a lot of solution for it, except for personal responsibility and accountability to try and spend the state's resources and the university's resources as wisely as we can. But when you start crunching numbers and overlaying a business model on top of education, it breaks down education. And so I've really seen, we've seen in the field of music, you know, students come into our program that are far less prepared than they would have been 8 to 10 years ago. And I think it's a direct result of that, trying to make a square peg fit in a round hole.
Yeah, well, you know, like you were saying, that's a very, you know, that it's a very personal educational experience, especially within the arts. Because if you think about it, just, I mean, with music, with, you know, literature, all those things, it's almost intimate in a way, because you're looking for this aha moment. Mm-hmm. When, you know, because you this thing that you're doing as a musician, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, I'm going to try to transmit this skill to you.
Yep.
That this person does not know it, and then they get it.
Yep.
And then they're like, oh, and you know, that happens in all fields of teaching. And that's actually a relatively priceless moment.
It is.
So how do you put a dollar amount on priceless?
How do you quantify that? Totally. And it's really, it becomes far less in my mind about the aha, I get the content, but instead, aha, I get the process. And when you work closely in a one-on-one environment, say in private lessons, what I'm really, yes, I'm trying to teach music, and yes, I'm trying to relay my musical information and expertise to the student, but I'm really trying to teach them to be independent learners, and the process of preparing music and the process that goes into the collaboration with other artists and other musicians in rehearsals and things. Personal responsibility, integrity, those are the kind of things I'm trying to instill into the student. And when that aha moment happens, then I can kind of sit back and go, okay, now you're ready to go out and succeed on your own. And so it becomes a little less about content. And yeah, I understand assessments and measurements, and we need to be accountable and measure and assess. I have no problem with that.
It's just a matter of figuring out what's the best way of doing
it. What's the best way to do it?
Yeah, you're not going to get a multiple choice test, which is going to reveal these things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. You know, things like portfolio reviews is a great way to do it. You know, there's so many technology, media things available to us that it's very, very easy now for students to go ahead and document their effectiveness. As a matter of fact, we're implementing in its pilot phase this semester the teacher preparation assessment. And so The St. Cloud State University is participating along with another other institutions around the nation. A process by which students out in the field while they're student teaching will have to prepare a video that documents their teaching effectiveness and upload that to a Pearson-like company that will train evaluators to evaluate that videotape and as part of their licensure requirement. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a great way to assess how that student is prepared to enter the field of teaching. Absolutely.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what is it exactly that music teaches? Why is this important?
Music is important. The arts are important, again, because I think of what it teaches about process. And there's just so much research that's been done that students involved in music, as they're coming up through middle school and high school, score better in other types of exams. What it has taught me, and I think has prepared me, for instance, to act for this period of time as department chair, organizational abilities, task development, breaking things down into tasks you can achieve and goals you can achieve. You do that when you get a piece of music. You have to have a process and a plan of attack in order to learn it. And it takes a great deal of commitment and dedication and time management. And we see a real connection in the music department to students across the campus. We have, you know, easily 40% of our ensembles are populated by students who are pursuing other degrees, and they have a strong passion for making music because they enjoy that process of tackling a task, breaking it down. They also enjoy the social network. You know, it's a real strong support mechanism. You know, you might be having a tough time, you might be needing to talk with somebody, you might be going through a small bout of depression or anxiety, and to have a concert choir or a wind ensemble or an orchestra or a percussion ensemble or a jazz band, I mean, the list goes on of the ensemble opportunities we provide. You can come each day, sometimes daily with concert choir, or once or twice a week to some of the other ensembles, and, you know, participate and share and try and let go of some of that anxiety. My World Drumming Group is easily 80% about that. I teach the drumming. We have a lot of fun. We explore cultures. We do some research on the cultures. But it's really just about coming and doing some drumming and spending an hour twice a week just letting go of all of the anxieties and pressures and financial pressures and relationship pressures. There's just so much that's put on the shoulders of students these days. And I think in the Department of Music, we have a haven for, you know, trying to let go of some of that. So I think music is incredibly important, and it is difficult to quantify. And I have no fear that music's going to go away in the public schools. And I think anybody who's got a brain on their shoulders can see the good things that happen in any music program. And sometimes difficult decisions have to be made when it comes to budgets. But I think people recognize the loss, and they'll hopefully return to, when they're able, reinstating some of those cuts that may have been taken back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Yeah, because you know, it does go somewhere. You know,
right.
In my interaction with some of these students, I run into them here and there, and they're struggling with the regular things that humans struggle with, you know, different things.
Yep.
But at the same time, they're more apt to have a creative response to it. There's something, they realize that, okay, things aren't going very well right now, but they realize it, and then they can...
Yes.
Figure out a way out.
Find a solution for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is that problem solving and that recognition of, you know, what's the process. And
yep.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah. And then eventually, who knows, get them to Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, might end up in Carnegie Hall. Nice segue.
Yeah. Thanks for talking with me today.
Right on, man.
Cool.
Right on. Thanks, man.
And that was St. Cloud State University Music Department Chair Terry Vermillion. And for more information on Trio Lorca, as well as other performances and programs offered by the music department, you can find it online at St. Cloud State University's website at www.stcloudstate.edu/music. And as we fade on out, we're going to hear a little bit of a performance from Trio Lorca. It was recorded at St. Cloud State as they were preparing for their trip to Carnegie Hall in New York. This has been Jeff Carmack reporting on our arts and cultural heritage for KVSC News. And this report was made possible through a grant by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the Legacy Amendment. It has been produced by KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities.